Welcome to Inside Mastery, and thanks for joining us. I'm Martin Sorgiou, mental performance coach and host of the show. Each week, we'll bring you leading experts and practical advice from the fields of human performance, psychology, and leadership. Now, let's get the show started. My guest today is former FBI counterintelligence and undercover agent Lorraine Kwai. Lorraine is now a leadership and mental toughness coach, and on today's show, she'll be talking about exactly what mental toughness is, why you need it, and how to develop it. Hey, Lorraine, welcome to Inside Mastery, and thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for asking me.
It's an absolute pleasure, Lorraine. Now, you have an amazing background. You were an FBI counterintelligence and undercover agent who exposed foreign spies and recruited them to work for the US government. You're a leadership and mental toughness coach, and you're the author of Secrets of a Strong Mind, a great book which I've read, and Mental Toughness for Women Leaders. Today, I'd really like to discuss your experience and insights into mental toughness.
That sounds like fun. It's one of my favorite subjects.
Excellent. Good. All right, let's start with a really straightforward question, but I think a question which an issue, you know, I think different people have different views on what mental toughness means. I think it means different things to different people. What does it really mean to you?
Well, you're so right about that. When I say mental toughness, a variety of ideas and thoughts come to mind. For me, I will describe it in one very simple statement. It is believing that you will prevail in your circumstances rather than believing your circumstances will change. And that encompasses a lot of different thoughts. There's a lot of components of mental toughness, actually four, that I've identified, and this will probably be the topic of my next book, because mental toughness really does need to be codified. It needs to be looked at within a framework so that people can get a better understanding of exactly what it is.
And that's really interesting, because, you know, I think there is a lack of a framework, actually. I think most people have a kind of woolly idea of what it is. But when's your new book coming out, Lorraine?
Well, I haven't written it yet. I'm in the process.
Okay.
And I've been approached by a publisher, and so we're in the process of some negotiation there. But I already have in mind exactly what I do want to put in this book, because I've really identified four components. And I can go over them if you would like.
Yeah, that would be great.
Great. The first one is emotional competence. Now, we all know what emotional intelligence is. But we also know a lot of people who are intelligent, but not necessarily competent. Mm. So I use the word or phrase emotional competence because it is putting to use the things that we understand about ourselves and about others. So we have that. I always start off any kind of coaching or talk with or training with stressing the importance of self-awareness. Because if you don't know yourself, you're going to have a very hard time knowing what is best for you as you move forward, or what those goals, those meaningful goals, truly are. You can't really get there until you know what your values are, who you are as a person. So self-awareness, self-management is priority. And second is awareness of others, empathy. I think we all understand that empathy is becoming more and more important as our businesses become more and more complex. We have to be able to reach out and build relationships. So we have to be able to know how to communicate, both verbally and non-verbally, and be aware of our social situation. So that's what I mean by emotional competence. The second component is resilience. Resilience is basically the willingness to take responsibility for your actions. No whining or blaming others or pointing fingers. It's being able to bounce back from or bounce around whatever obstacle or roadblock is in your way. And there's a lot of things that come into resilience. It's having the confidence. I mean, so many times when people come up against a roadblock and the resilience of being able to find another way around it, they stall. That's where they stall, because they really lack the confidence in themselves to move forward through a discomfort zone, to face, actually to accept that this one way did not work. Failure is that horrible word that so many people refuse to embrace. And there is no learning unless there is failure. And you're only stupid if you don't learn from your failure. So these are the components that make up resilience, moving beyond those self-limiting beliefs so many of us find ourselves confronted with when we are confronted with the unknown. We're not sure. And unless you have self-awareness, unless you know who you are, you're not going to be able to predict your response when confronted with the unknown. And that's not a place of strength. The third component is willpower. And that is exactly what it means. It means having the grit, the determination, endurance, persistence to keep moving through. It's focusing on your performance. It's managing your time wisely. It's pushing limits. And fourth component is having that champion mindset. It's all about attitude, of having a positive attitude, having a growth mindset, of being thankful, of having a tribe or community that is supportive of you to help you when times do get tough. So that was broadly, that's the framework for the book.
It's a very comprehensive definition, I think, or analysis of mental toughness. And I think it has elements in there that would surprise many people. So I think certainly most people would understand and relate to the attitude and equally the willpower. You know, I think we can think of willpower in terms of determination, perhaps being another word that's in the same space, certainly. I think people will be surprised, I entirely agree with you, but I think, you know, people will be surprised perhaps when you talk about mental competence. I mean, let me come back to you. I mean, you talk about mental competence, are you including within that a person's management of their emotions, so emotional regulation?
Absolutely. And it'd be emotional competence as opposed to mental competence. It's being emotionally intelligent and then being smart with it, not just intelligent, but being competent with it. So it is being able to regulate your own emotions. I've had, mental toughness is managing your thoughts, emotions, and behavior in ways that will set you up for success. So often, it is our emotions that sabotage us. When we're up against a situation that we didn't expect, if we can predict all the adversity in our life or all the roadblocks, I mean, we would need to be mentally tough, but we can't predict all that. And I mean, it's why it's so important to develop mental toughness. So being able to regulate your own emotions is so key. And this is where self-awareness is very, very important. So many people, they deny emotions that are not positive. So if they have a negative emotion, let's just say it's anger or envy or just a negative emotion, so often people will try to suppress it. And that does no good, because it's always going to be there. When you try to tamp down or suppress any emotion, it's not necessarily healthy. But the key to this, in neuroscience, I read and I marry a lot of neuroscience with social psychology. Mm-hmm. But it is negative emotions are their weakest when they first appear. So the best thing you can do when you are feeling a negative emotion is to nip it in the bud there, then and there. And it means if you're feeling anger, admit it. Call it for what it is.
Acknowledge
in one
it.
Or two words.
Yep.
Acknowledge it. Now, the worst thing you can do is then enter into a dialogue about it with yourself. Because then what you're doing is you're giving it legs. I mean, it's getting bigger. You're growing it. So just name it for what it is, anger, jealousy, pissed off, whatever word you want to use. Be honest with yourself. You don't have to be honest with anybody else. as much as you have to be honest with yourself, right? So,
yep.
So you know, that's just life. The
yep.
sooner you get that figured out, the smarter you're going to be. And so, so the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, and there's emotions I really am embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I was really jealous. Or, you know what I mean? They're very unflattering emotions, but they're fast.
Sure. But you know,
No,
I was going to say, I think, you know, sometimes some of those emotions can be useful. I mean, you talked about anger and, you know, certainly there is a place for channeling anger, turning it into fuel, and using that in a positive way. So one, acknowledging it, and at certain times when you've got to get through something really difficult, you know, and it's something that certainly athletes use and I guess military personnel use, and I think it's a technique that can work if harnessed in the right way.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the other, absolutely. First of all, emotions are just natural. They come from the limbic brain system. And it's not like they're good or bad. And it's just the way that we use them and the way they play out through our body or our behavior. So the limbic brain is interested in keeping us safe. That's its primary, and it's our gut reaction. It's before all the nicety comes out, before all the PC, the politically correct responses. It's our gut reaction to something, like, oh, crap, or whatever. Now, the reason I bring this up is because negative emotions are stronger than positive emotions.
Mm.
The reason is, throughout history, since the caveman days, our negative emotions have been used to keep us safe, to keep us safe and for us to get lunch and not be lunch. I mean, so when we have a fear of something, our body, our limbic brain system is reacting. It's telling you, wait a minute, be careful here. But not everything that is new or different is a threat to our life. So we have to, and our brain can quickly go through this, and it can, but it's interesting how when we're afraid of something, maybe somebody's afraid of, maybe they're afraid of a promotion. I've talked to so many people at so many different levels in their career, and there's really nobody that gets to the point where that they say, you know what, I'm absolutely confident in every situation that comes up. There's always that growth edge of where you say, wow, that's new, that's different. I'm hoping I can do this. I wonder how I'm going to do this. But there's no doubt that they have the confidence that they will do it. But that first reaction is always, wow, I've never done that before. And then the thinking brain comes over and says, but you've done this many times before. You've met challenges before, and then you're on your way. But I'm just saying, getting back to that initial negative reaction, it's important to play with that, to understand how you respond when you're confronted with the unknown. Because if you don't control it when it first rises its ugly head, it's going to be harder and harder and harder. And then when you let it get legs, it's running away with you.
Oh, absolutely. We become slaves to our emotions. And we see that play out in terms of our fear of loss. You know, people will irrationally not want to lose something of less value than they'll want to gain something of much greater value. And again, in terms of fear, we see, you know, the media. And I know you know this, you know, they'll, with the news and stuff, they'll run with all the terrible stories to get our attention. And just at the end, you get that positive story. But the hook, because of the way our brains work, is the negative. And, you know,
absolutely
what you're talking about there, you know, it comes back to your point about awareness and that being a key component of mental toughness. That, you know, because in a way, it's that ability to almost step outside of yourself and really understand and watch how your brain is working, because that's when you get real power. That's when you get real strength, when you can actually see, okay, you know, this happens and I do that. So, you know, what I've got to do next time is, you know, with that awareness, not almost operate like an automaton.
Absolutely. And you know, it's you controlling your mind rather than your mind controlling you. And I think we've all been there. At least I have been.
Oh,
where it's like, oh, wait a minute. No, yes. And so again, it all starts with awareness. I mean, once you have that, then you can work on working in developing your confidence, busting through self-limiting beliefs. You can, you know, be flexible with goals. You can do all these, and you can be, and you can bring in your willpower, your grit, determination. You can, you know what I'm saying? They're all related, but it all starts with your emotions, your attitude, your ability to understand yourself and predict your response rather than simply react.
One of the most effective tools I've found for myself and for my clients in terms of increasing awareness is meditation, even for 10 minutes a day. Are there any specific things that you recommend that people can do to increase their awareness?
Well, meditation, there's a lot of science in meditation. I mean, there's the neuroscience has been able to just sort of help us understand how we can, what parts of the brain are activated when we do enter into a meditative state. But meditation is probably the single best way you can get in control of your emotions and feelings. It will make you incredibly stronger. For this reason, so many people I talk to, I'll say, okay, have you tried meditation? Like, oh, I have, but my mind just keeps wandering and going, precisely the point. If you can sit, it doesn't matter. You sit and you close your eyes and you think of a word or a thought that you want to keep your mind focused on. And sure enough, something else will come in over here on the side of your mind. It's like, that's okay. Acknowledge it and then bring your mind back. And each time you do that, it gets stronger. You are actually being in more control of your mind the more that you have these thoughts, these errant thoughts that keep, you know, coming at you from the side. It's like, that's life. That is just life. If you can keep your mind focused, gently push away those thoughts. Don't get angry with yourself. Just gently push away those thoughts. You are training your mind to listen, to obey. I mean, you know, you're training your thoughts to obey what you want them to do. And believe me, when it comes to being positive and positive thinking is an incredible mental toughness tool. And it's very different than optimism. And I make a very big distinction between optimism and positive thinking. But again, if you practice, start with meditation, you can then train your mind to start reframing what's going on, the crap that's going on around you. You can start looking for the positive, and you have to really hunt the good stuff, because in a lot of situations, I mean, we're talking about mental toughness because we're talking about the need to get through complex situations to take your performance to the next level. So it's not handed to you on a platter.
Absolutely. Larrea, I just want to bring this back around to you. You had a pretty serious role in the FBI. I mean, this is James Bond stuff. How did you become mentally tough? Was there a particular time, or is there a process, or are you able to look back and see the journey that led you to becoming so tough?
Well, you know, I will have to, you know, Martin, I'll have to tell you, I grew up on a cattle ranch in the middle of Wyoming, and I learned a little bit about growing up tough, having the grit it takes to make it through. I mean, the biggest threat to my safety when I was growing up were rattlesnakes, and and I rode horses over sagebrush. You know, they would just keep making sure I stayed on that horse and didn't fall off. So I when I interviewed for the FBI, they really liked my story because I didn't grow up spoiled. You know, I was stacking bales when I was 8 and 9 years old.
Wow.
I wasn't entitled. You know, I wasn't some prima donna, and they really liked that. So when I said, you know what? I loved the people I interviewed with, and I really felt like this would be a good path for me. So I went into the FBI Academy, and it was not easy for me. I will be the first to say, I did fine with the firearms. I did fine with the academic, the federal law, but the physical fitness part was very, very difficult for me. And so I, about halfway through the academy, there was a test, which I didn't know about. And it was, we were to jump from a 25-foot diving board into a pool of water, holding an M16, and then swim to the other side of the pool, still holding the weapon. Well, I got up there, and I had two very serious problems. First of all, I couldn't swim. And the second was, I was afraid of heights. But I had to make this jump if I was going to graduate from the FBI. Now, I watched as even experienced swimmers from that distance with that weapon came up, and they were gagging for breath and floundering, and I felt sure I was going
to
die.
And did you have to hold it in your hands, Lorraine? I'm just trying to visualize this, because I saw you mentioned it in the book, and I thought, how on earth did you do that? I can't even visualize how a person can. I can visualize how they can dive holding a handgun, but I'm just thinking,
holding an M16
with both hands, I guess, and diving head first still?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, you know what? I think most of us just jumped, and so it was feet first. We didn't actually die.
Okay.
So but we had to hold on to the weapon. Now, I felt sure I was going to die, but I also knew that if I didn't, I knew, Martin, if I didn't, it was my dream of becoming an FBI agent would be the thing to die. So this is when I started learning about positive thinking. It was one of those instinctive things. I only had a split second up there because everyone was waiting. I mean, everyone. And everyone knew I was scared. And everyone knew by that time that I didn't know how to swim. So I started thinking about all the things that would save me. And I knew that my instructor and most of my classmates were very good swimmers, and they would come to my rescue. They put a life vest on me. I knew that they wouldn't want the lawsuit that my parents would launch if I did die. I thought about the fact that I had never heard of anybody dying from that swimming platform exercise. So that gave me some confidence right there. And then also I truly felt a spiritual kind of thing where I really felt that this is where God was leading me. Those were five positive thoughts.
Mm.
So I did. I jumped.
So this was your self-talk, basically.
This was self-talk. It's exactly what it was, self-talk. Yep. And so I jumped, and I popped out long enough to grab another, lung full of air. And I basically crawled on the bottom to the other side of the pool, but I never let go of the weapon. That's the important thing, because that was the ultimate requirement. You had to go with that weapon, right? You had to show up with that weapon on the other side. So right then and there, it was kind of one of those things where I realized I needed to really take my thinking to the next step. No more coddling, no more looking to others to save me. I needed to save myself. So, and then I will tell you another incident that happened a short time after I got out of the academy, my first office. I'd only been there a couple of months, and I was working criminal matters at that time. And the guy on the squad next to me was working organized crime. Or organized crime gang. It was more like a gang. And he needed a date, an arm charm, to go with him to this barbecue. And, 25 years old, I thought, how much fun is that going to be? I mean, I had seen all the movies, and, I'm thinking, oh, wow, this is going to be the good stuff. James Bond, like you just said, sort of. So I left my gun at home and took fake ID instead. And went with this guy, and everything's fine. There was a rough group. I mean, they were murderers, extortionists, drug dealers, you name it. It was a rough crowd. But I was outside. It was very hot, and I'm very light complexion. I had to go get some sunscreen. So I went into the bedroom where they had put my handbag, and I saw two women go through it, where they were going through it. And I'm going, oh, boy. And I just tried to pretend that, all was well, no big deal. I just said I need my sunscreen. But then a couple of guys followed me into the bedroom, and they closed the door behind them. And I knew I was in trouble. It was a very serious moment for me.
And you didn't have a weapon on you, Lorraine.
Oh, good God, no. Okay. No. Okay. And I, it's fake ID. I mean, okay. You know, I would some other name.
Wow.
So my goal at that point was to get out of that room unharmed, period. That was my goal. And so I could tell by the way they started questioning me, they were very concerned about who I really was. Who are you really? And who is that jerk that you came with? I'm going, oh, boy. This guy, what did I get myself into? They were on to the undercover agent, right?
Mm.
So I had probably one of my biggest growth spurts of mental toughness in my career at that moment. And it was this. I decided to tell them exactly who I was. I was as honest with them as I possibly could be about growing up in the middle of Wyoming, about needing to get away while I was still able in college. I told them everything except my true name and my true identity. I was authentic. I was Lorraine in everything except my name. And I realized at that point, you know, you can slap whatever name or title you want on your badge, but you need to be who you are. And when I start talking about being from Wyoming, and one of the women was the first to actually open up. She goes, oh, really? Just like that. And I knew then it was like she had a curiosity about Wyoming. I said, yeah. And where are you from? She was like from Kansas or something. Anyway, the bottom line is I got out of that room unharmed. Now, they believed me. That undercover agent I went with, a couple of weeks later, we learned they put a hit out on him, and he was immediately transferred to another city.
Wow.
But I have to tell you, the only time in my entire undercover career that I ever ran into trouble working undercover was when I tried to be somebody other than who I was.
Mm.
And that is just a basic element of truth. Everyone that you ever talk to that is going to be honest with you about how they work undercover, and it's how the FBI profiles their undercover agents, they want to know that the basic personality type is not going to change. You keep as close to who you genuinely are as you possibly can, because that's genuine. You try to be some, and that was what the undercover agent failed to do. He was trying to be some, I don't know, I think he thought he was trying to be some playboy type or something. I mean, it just wasn't him. He couldn't play the part.
Mm.
And unless you're a professional actor, you're not going to be able to get away with it. Even they can't get away with it. They're always drawing on some part of themselves that's true.
Well, you were really practicing some remarkable emotional regulation then, Lorraine. I mean, that you had, you know, to keep so calm under that pressure with four of them in the room.
Well, it wasn't playtime anymore. It was the real thing. And I think what a lot of times what happens to people when they get in their own situations, whether it's a career, maybe their situation with their boss or a colleague or whatever, and it's maybe the first they fall on their face because they don't know how to react, or they can't control their emotion. And that gets right back to the thing we started with, Martin, with being able to recognize what emotion. I knew what was in my mind. I knew I was scared to death. I mean, it was about as real as it could get. And so I'm going, okay, how am I going to get myself out of this? But this is the thing, Martin, I got to tell you something. I got scared to death when I was 10 years old because I was on horseback trying to help my grandmother cut some cattle. And she wanted me to go get an old horned bull out, and she wanted to sell him. So she sent me after him on this. I was 10 years old on this big black quarter horse, cutting horse. And the bull did not want to go. And the horse was able to cut him off several times. And all of a sudden, that bull turned horns first, and he charged my horse. So I'm just saying I was afraid then. I knew right then and there the last thing I was going to do was get bucked off because my horse reared, and I said, I am not falling off in front of a charging bull. I mean, forget it. So I there was no option for me. I stuck to that saddle, and we got away. So I'm just saying it wasn't the first time I had been in a situation where I felt genuine fear. And I'm not saying I'm going to tell your audience, oh, go out and do things that would scare you to death. But I am saying, get out there and get beyond the outside of your comfort zone.
I agree.
You just don't want that first time to be out of your comfort zone at a time when it really, really matters.
Absolutely. And I think what you've touched upon there, and it's something I firmly believe, you know, mental toughness is something that we have the opportunity really to develop through those difficult experiences. You know, it's not something you can, I don't think you can fully learn it through coaching, teaching, reading a book. I think that's a major part of it. But I think there's a part which is when you have to go through some of these experiences and put those learnings into practice to have that awareness, to really use that emotional regulation. And I think people, you know, I think what you say is absolutely right. People, they stay in their comfort zone. And I think that's a problem that is getting worse, certainly in Western societies where things, you know, if you go back 150 years, you know, even 20 years, things are so much easier for so many people. And I think people are losing their ability to survive. And I think, you know, the point you make there is absolutely right. When something comes along that's really challenging, if they've gone through life staying in their comfort zone and avoiding challenges, or not approaching the challenges that we all face, then they're just not going to be ready.
They won't be, Martin. And my advice, whether it's a coach or in training or in my books or whatever, always have a petri dish. I mean, some activities of which you have no idea how it's going to turn out, of which you are like, wow, I wonder where this is going to go. It will put you outside your comfort zone. I mean, if you can't sing, take singing lessons. I don't know where that's going to go, and you may, you know, never. But I'm just saying, always try something where you're a little off balance, where you're not quite sure how you're going to land on your feet. Because only by, I'll tell you again, it comes down to self-awareness. So if you know how you're going to seize up or how you're going to respond, you're ahead of the game. You can predict your response, as I had mentioned before. So I really encourage people to always have that petri dish. Always have that something that's just a little outside your grasp. And I don't mean that to be, you know, always wanting. I'm not saying it's monetary. What I am saying, it is something that, certainly not in relationships, I'm not talking that. I'm talking about personal best. I'm talking about you taking yourself to the next step in whatever area of life it needs to be, you're in right now. I don't care if you're 80, 70, 20, 30, 15, wherever. Don't give up on working on yourself.
Absolutely. I think that's great advice, Lorraine. What led you to becoming a leadership and mental toughness coach?
Well, I retired when I was eligible. I retired from the FBI when I was eligible, not when it was mandatory. And I spent 24 years. I loved the FBI, I must say. I love the people. I really believe in the mission. These are people who really believe that they are here to make a difference in the world and try to make things better. But, you know, I knew that I always wanted to write. That was something else I always knew I wanted to do. And so, again, this was pushing me outside my comfort zone. I sort of went from knowing everything about what my job was to knowing absolutely nothing. You know, I'd never written before. And so it was a very humbling. And it's very interesting. I'll share this part of my journey with you because it again, relates to mental toughness. But so I'd say, you know, people ask me, what are you going to do? I say, oh, I'm going to write. Oh, that'd be, oh, wow, you'd write a great spy story. To go, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I could write a spy story. It didn't really, so then I wrote one because everyone else told me I should. And I thought, well, yeah, that's very logical, isn't it? And it was horrible. I mean, I couldn't, an agent looked at it and said, oh, my God, this is horrible stuff. And so I'm going, oh, my confidence level just plummeted. I'm going, wow, what did I get wrong? I mean, what is wrong? So I looked at it like an investigation because no FBI agent ever gets a case assigned to them where there's, rarely, I don't think ever, you get a case where the answer is right in front of you, where you know exactly the path to take to get the evidence you need to solve the case. Instead, you look at it and go, okay, let's try this. That doesn't work. You come back and you say, okay, let's take the evidence we've gathered so far, the facts, let's reanalyze, let's try another way. And so you go around the problem, under the problem, over the problem, until you find a soft underbelly. And then you know that you've come the right way. And I sort of looked at it like this. I said, okay, I took this writing from this direction. That didn't work. So buck up. Get, you know, I mean, slap my face around a little bit. Don't start, you know, feeling sorry for yourself. Try something else. And so basically, I just kind of followed my gut on this one. I just said, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start a blog, and I'm just going to write about what I know. And what I know is the FBI and what I learned from my experiences in the FBI. And once I got that far, the rest fell into place. It just fell into place. So I think that probably what I'm going to say to you is the second half of my life is all about unpacking the first half.
That's it. That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, it's right. But it took several tries to get the right fit. So it's not like you just get the answer and you run with it. And when people, a lot of times I talk to people and it's like, oh, I follow your passion. I'm going, oh my, if I hear that one more time, I'll probably throw up. So yeah, you know, you do have to, but I use this same example for talking about, you know, what you need to do is look at what you do in your job. How many of us can say that the job that we have right now is the perfect job? I'm following my passion by this job, and you knew it right out of college. No, instead you need to experiment.
Absolutely.
You need to hop around a little bit. You need to get the experience under your belt. And then what you need to do is look at what parts of your job you love and which parts of your job you hate. Now, the parts of your job you love, is it 50%, 20%, 10%? Identify whatever it is and figure out what it is about that percentage of your job you love. Now, even if that means 90% that you don't, if that 10% is something that you really love doing, find ways to make that 10% your 90%. And that will mean changing. It will mean changing your job. It will mean moving around a little bit. But nobody walks out graduates with a coupon from a university that's stamped with, you know, the perfect job.
And all of those things that you're talking about there, Larray, are perfect examples, really, of mental toughness in action. And I think
absolutely
one of the things that must make you, I think, you know, a really compelling coach is the fact that you have really walked the walk. You're not doing this from an academic perspective. You've really been in really, really tough situations, which most people won't have faced. And then on top of that, you've got the you know, you understand the research, you've got the intellectual arguments as well. And I think when you put those things together, any coach who has really walked the walk is inevitably going to be able to bring about real change with their clients in a way that somebody who just knows it from a theoretical perspective can't. One of the things I'm really interested to get your view on, Larray, is whether or not you think there are any differences between men and women when it comes to mental toughness.
No, I don't. And I've written a book called Mental Toughness for Women Leaders, but between you and me, it could be Mental Toughness for Leaders. I wanted to write it for women by a woman because I felt like it would be perhaps for some, in a way, an easier voice to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just no research out there that indicates our minds are that much different. Now, having said that, I will say I write for, and I'm writing an article now about emotional intelligence. And the thing with women or girls is that girls are given permission to be emotionally intelligent as little girls, even playing with their little dolls. They talk to them. They build relationships with their dolls. Those are something that a lot of little boys are not allowed to do, or at least they're not encouraged to do. And so I always say to women, you've got a step up with emotional intelligence just from the get-go because of the way you were raised as a little girl. And the other thing that's very interesting is that women read faces a lot of times better than men. And the theory behind that is not that they think different. It's that most, at least traditionally, traditionally women are the caregivers for children. And when a child can't communicate words, they'll use facial expressions. I mean, you get so you know by a look on a face. I mean, how many times has your mom told you, Martin, get that look off your face? I mean, at least my mom has, right? And
yep.
So
you're right. I mean, it's a great point. You know, dads rarely say that. It's always the mums. Yeah.
It is. It just is. And so I'm just going to say, biologically, neurologically, there's not a lot of difference. Now, there is one point I would like to make, that the tests that have been conducted in neuroscience and social psychology, when it comes to emotional intelligence, there was a couple of tests. I think it was called the Hayes test, Hayes, and they could not find, women were not performing better at emotional intelligence than men. And they were going, wait a minute, what are we missing? And so they said to the women, you're not doing better than the men. They said, well, what is this to measure? They said, but it's emotional intelligence. And you're supposed to rate higher. And when they knew that, guess what? They did better. Because it was expected of them.
Yep.
Isn't that interesting, though?
Yep.
Now, the only other difference that they could find in this test, and it's a pretty exhaustive test, was that when it gets to empathy, there's a part of the brain that women will tend to stay with a person's feelings longer, whereas men, their brain kind of turns to what can we do to fix the problem.
Empathy is
not feeling sorry for another person. Empathy is being able to understand the sorrow in another person. So women's brains, that part of the brain that will ignite and light up. An MRI can tell you. We can do MRIs of the brain now and to measure some of these emotions. And men's, another part of the brain sort of lights up to, okay, let's find a solution for it.
Yeah.
And really, that's about it. Now, the only other difference that I've been able to find, and I know that there are people out there who disagree with me, but really, seriously, when you get to neuroscience, just crack it down by the science. The only thing that's different is that women are convinced that they can multitask better than men. Well, they can't. They can't. There is no difference between men and women, and this is a big lie that a lot of women allow themselves to absorb. They cannot. Their brains cannot do it. Now, what neuroscience has shown, however, is that women can switch between tasks more quickly.
Yeah.
So they need to focus. If you want to multitask, you, men and women, need to focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Now, what women can do then is switch from that one thing to the second thing. Men's brains take a little longer, and that's it. So there's really no difference. I mean, it's kind of shocking. I expected there to be a lot, and I've read a lot of junk out there, you know, just articles, and they're not backed up by science. And then when you dig deep down into the science that they purport, it's junk. You know what I mean? It's very controversial. It's not really collaborated. It's like a lot of the news stories. It's dangerous anymore, what you read.
Oh, absolutely. I think neuroscience and MRIs are really changing and shattering, you know, myths that have been around for a long time. I mean, I think, you know, we've all believed for a very long time we could multitask. And you know, I think now it's pretty clear that that's a misunderstanding, certainly in relation to tasks that require focus. I think, you know, obviously we can do a couple of things at the same time where they're low level tasks. But it's interesting that you say that women switch between tasks quicker. And in relation to the point about expectations, again, I hadn't come across, I think you said the Hayes research, but I know there's other research out there which looked at the impact on race in the context of academic performance. And when, you know, when there are certain expectations made of people, they performed better. So, you know, that certainly makes a lot of sense to me. What would you say what are the principal ways that mental toughness is really an asset in the lives of the people you coach? Because I assume that,
you know, a majority of your clients are not people either going into or in the FBI.
No. Most of the people I end up talking to, my biggest audience are entrepreneurs.
Okay.
And people who are kind of in a situation where they really want to take their performance to the next level. Now, one thing, I'm not an inspirational coach, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying anything negative in that respect, but people who come to me really are motivated. They don't need to be motivated. They are motivated.
Absolutely.
They are just looking for tools to authentically move to the next level in their career, in their life, you know, or whatever. So, you know, I think a lot of people, if they're content where they are, they're kind of the only difference between a rut and a coffin are the dimensions. So if you're in a rut and you're happy, you're probably not going to really find my advice to be that, you know, earth shattering for you. But if you are somebody who really does want to sort of make a change and expand your potential and really discover who you are, yeah, that is the kind of person who would enjoy my books, enjoy my blogs, or my training programs.
Lorraine, we're coming towards the end. I've just got a couple more questions, very short questions, really. Firstly,
sure.
What would be the three things, three pieces of advice you would give people who want to develop mental toughness, but they have no idea where to start?
Sure. I think I would go back to what we started with the beginning of our chat, and that is to do some serious self-work, work of self-awareness of who you are and who you want to be. I don't think you can really start on a journey like this unless you know where you want to go. And you're not going to know where you want to go unless you know yourself well enough to know what's important to you, what belief system is important to you, what are your values, where do you want to see yourself in 10 years. So that step in self-awareness is huge, and I would say always, always, always the first step. And second step is to get an attitude adjustment. In other words, if you're going to be a spoiled, entitled, woe is me, it's your fault, not my fault kind of person, life is just going to get harder for you, not easier, as you age and the reality of life sets in. So the right attitude is incredibly, incredibly important. And not only attitude about yourself and about others, but having an attitude of thanksgiving, of gratitude, of having relationships around you that are important. No man or woman is an island. We all need community. And you need to find your community. It doesn't have to be a big one, but you need it. And if it's two people or three people or if it's 30, it's whatever your community is, find your tribe. And these are the people who are going to be your best allies when times get tough. Be picky about that tribe. Make sure there are people who support you, who care about you, and are not going to drag you down.
That's great advice, Lorraine, and it's advice anybody can really start to implement. Where can people find more about you, your coaching, and your books?
Absolutely. You know, just go to my website, LorraineQuay.com, LarraeQuy.com. And you'll find my blog there. You go to Amazon.com. Secrets of a Strong Mind is my first book. By the way, Martin, I'm going to be revising that. I was approached by a publisher who's really excited about creating a workbook to go with that.
That's a great idea, book, actually. Yeah. Because I've read that book. I thought it was a phenomenal book, but a workbook makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does, I think. And the second book is Mental Toughness for Women Leaders. For all the guys out there, this is a good book for you too. It's a great book for your daughters or your wives or girlfriends. but it's a good book for you as well. So, and you can go on my website, and I will be offering training programs. I'm going to be breaking them down. I decided to do online training to make it accessible and affordable for people, just breaking it down by topic. So the first one that will be out is How to Build Confidence, and that one, I think it's like $47 for a full hour of training, and it'll be, you know, really breaking down ways that you can be build your confidence. And I'll be adding those as I go as well.
And you've got, although I've not completed it, but I really should, you've got an assessment tool as well, which anyone can
go on. I do. I thank you for mentioning that, Martin. If you have any, if you're curious at all about how you rate in mental toughness in emotion, thought, or behavior, it's a free test. It's a 45 question assessment. So it covers a variety. It's meant to give you just an overview of where you're strong or maybe not as strong in some of those areas that are really vital when it comes to mental toughness and developing mental toughness.
Okay. I will, but as long as the results aren't ever made public, because my credibility might be ruined.
Oh, no, they're not. No, it's totally personal. In fact, I don't even see them.
Okay.
I don't see them. If you take that assessment, the results, the complete analysis only goes to the person who sees it. I don't even see it.
I'm intrigued.
You for taking it, but...
I'm definitely going to take it.
Lorraine, all right, that sounds good, Martin.
I really want to thank you ever so much for sharing your knowledge and experience with the audience. I think you know, it's been great listening to you. It was great reading your book, and I really encourage everybody to, you know, go to your website to check you out, to buy your books and to do your training, because you really know your stuff, and you, as I say, you've walked the walk. I'll post links to these in the show notes. Thanks again, Lorraine. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you so much.
You have a great day. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside Mastery. If you did, please subscribe and support the show by leaving a review on iTunes. And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me either on Twitter at Martin Sorgiou, on LinkedIn, or via my coaching website, martinsorgiou.com. Thanks again, and have a great day.